During World War II, Abbott was heavily involved in the production of a number of things, and of course, your role was crucial in terms of being a research director. The first one, and perhaps the major one that I wanted to talk about, was penicillin.
Yes.
And you've already mentioned that. Could you tell me something about Abbott's involvement in the penicillin production?
Well, it, of course, was the major project that time, not only in for itself, but in the potential discovery of other compounds like penicillin or involving the same kind of activity. of course, when the information became available first regarding penicillin and its amazing properties, where everybody got involved, including Abbott. And I think we did a pretty good job on that because we developed the process and carried on some research on things related to penicillin, but not penicillin itself. That really set the train going. I don't know. To what extent we could have done a bigger job, a better job. I think we did pretty well. not only with penicillin, but in the development of streptomycin. And there are a number of various pharmaceutical firms developed quite a number of antibiotics, not all of which by any means survived. Some of them got as far as the market and then failed.
In terms of that open cooperation with your previous competitors, Merck and Squibb and so on, did you meet with your counterparts at the other companies on a regular basis?
Only in the early days.
Only in the early days.
After that, competition decimated them appreciably. in some cases, the products under question were marketed by several firms but dropped out, but they weren't particularly important.
In terms of the penicillin, Adams was on the OSRD committee, and did you meet with him in those early days of the penicillin production? Did you have any contact with him during that time?
Well, we kept in touch with him about that time, but really the involvement of Adams in production of penicillin was not very great.
You, the company also was involved with blood plasma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a matter of equipment mainly. How to evaporate the water from the blood plasma most effectively. And several methods during that period were developed which got into actual production. That's where freeze drying first got its real start.
What about sulfa drugs? That was another.
Yes.
Abbott had been making those before the war, hadn't they?
That's right. Sulfanilamid, sulfadiazine, sulfathiazole.
Was that just a matter of increasing production then?
We spend quite a bit of time and effort on new sulfa drugs. while they amount to quite a bit in the case of drugs like sulfadiazine, sulfathiazole, we were not responsible for important new sulfa drugs. Originally responsible. The patent situation of a number of the new sulfa drugs was not very clear, so that nobody really had, in many cases, in case of a number of products, no one company really controlled the whole field.
Your involvement as research director at this time during the war, the Second World War, was I'm sure quite crucial. Can you tell me something about how the company geared up to produce large quantities and the extra effort that was made during that time?
Well, the extra effort involved more personnel, also involved more equipment, and also involved more buildings to take care of that equipment, because you could say, well, they're going to put a lot more equipment on this project, but unless you have a barn to put it in, it's no good. It isn't adequate. So the building program was one thing that was undertaken pretty early and very actively. Then new equipment, of course, that can follow if you have the demand, where equipment can be bought and installed as quickly as possible. So that went pretty well for those products.
Was there any effect when the war ended? The demand for many of these things must have changed.
Well, not as much as you might think, because the products were in great demand still, and the company tried to anticipate that by directing more money into and activity into research on these products, like the antibiotics. That was that followed the war right along. It didn't stop.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the war, you made a trip to Europe for the military.
Yeah.
Quite curious about your experiences in that. There were a number of people who went to Europe as the troops moved into Germany. Could you tell me something about those experiences, how you were involved in that?
Yeah, well, this is a very interesting development, because we didn't have any idea, or didn't have a good idea, about the kind of activity that the Germans were doing, and how intensive they were. So it gave us a good idea through Bayer and Hoechst and Boddicher. And our impression was, yes, they knew what they were doing. They had not developed on a scale that we thought they had. Their equipment was, they'd used more small batch sizes than we did in this country on comparable products. They had good relations with the universities. Their big committees, the big firms, were quite active in the businesses. They didn't mind getting involved deeply in the production of medicinals. They were, when we went over there, we know what they expect, how resistant they might be to discouraging information. Well, of course they dragged their feet some, but they were quite cooperative in general.
Did you follow the troops in? What was your when the troops moved into a city where there was a plant or?
Oh, they were scared to death, and they were very cooperative. In general, they were frightened. Of course, they tried to hide some things if they could get by with them, but in general, it worked out very well.
Were the troops present? Were there any troops present when you went into to talk to the Germans? Did they?
No, not in the let's say in the room in which you talked to the Germans.
But the plan had already been.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got into the Ruhr, for example, where Leverkusen, Bayer were. We got in there within two or three days, and the troops went in. So we got them fresh, and a byproduct that we were not assigned to was the war gases. And Bayer's. Growth of their work on agricultural pesticides, and a man named Schroeder, Dr. Schroeder, worked in that field with his assistants, and when the Wehrmacht found out about it, well, they took it away from Bayer and took it over beyond the Ural Mountains, where they stored 3,000 tons of this stuff.
Mm.
And I don't know, I haven't heard anything about that. But I know that's still over there. Because, in the first place, I guess it's a very difficult job to destroy or inactivate a large quantity of war gas. We're finding that out. That's the trouble we're having getting rid of what we've got, not finding new. went into, there were about eight of us in my team. When we went in to the Ruhr, we asked him, now we must know what you've been working on in the fields, and then they'd mentioned, including cultural chemicals and so on. And out of that came their statement, yes, they've done some work on agricultural chemicals, phosphorus containing compounds, which were very toxic. And so then the matter of war gases came up. So we said to Dr. Schroeder, we want you to tell us everything that you can about Taboon and the couple of other war gases. So we left him with a big pad of yellow paper to write out everything that he knew about the development of compounds. And we left him there all night. He worked at it all night. And next morning he gave it to us, and we looked it over, and we quickly dispatched a plane to Paris and another plane to London to the American headquarters there, who sent the information then to the United States. And that was the first information that we had in this country of what the German compounds were, the war gases. But that was an interesting circumstance. It grew out of their agricultural research, and I think it's true that they were not primarily interested in war gases, but they did develop war gases.
Do you think they were under orders to do that?
I don't know. I think they probably were.
Mm-hmm. You said there were eight in the team. Do you remember the names of some of the other people who were with you?
Fogler, White, Haught, H-A-U-G-H-T, Calcutt, C-A-L-C-O-T-T, Smadel, S-M-A-D-E-L, that's all I think of right now.
Okay, and what were their backgrounds? Were they?
Well, Smadel was a physician. He was a colonel in the army. Calcutt was the vice president of DuPont. Fogler was allied. I should remember White and Leeper's connections, but I can't call them off the fingertips.
Yeah. Did any of the information you uncovered in that trip prove useful to Abbott?
Somewhat in general, yes. Not in the matter of specific compounds, mm-hmm. particularly They were of interest to us, but we never developed them.
Was this information that you acquired made available to all of the companies? Was it strictly government information?
At the start, when the war ended, we were not supposed to divulge information. That was never really spelled out, though. Some of that information was immediately spread pretty broadly. Later it was generally available, but as for specific products, I would say it was not very extensively used.
Were the plants in the areas that you visited damaged heavily?
Oh yes, some of them were terribly destroyed.
Yeah. You were where Dusseldorf and
Leverkusen, Hoechst, they were all pretty severely hit.
In the period after the war, you were then vice president, and Abbott developed a number of new products. Interested in your role in their development, thinking of antihistamines, anti-epileptics, and of course Sucralose, which came around 1950, but I think the early work was much earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I think 50 was the date that Abbott started marketing the Sucralose. Can you tell me something about your involvement with those, with that post-war development?
Well, I that time was in fairly close touch with DuPont, with the products that might be of medicinal interest, and we would have contacts fairly regularly as to products that might be of interest, and Sucralose was one of them, because DuPont had the rights to it. But they thought the market was just a little too small to interest them, so they gave us the license to market. And I was pretty much responsible for that. Then later, DuPont decided, well, Abbott's doing pretty well with that. Maybe we ought to be in anyway. And they did market Cyclamate for a while, but were disappointed in their results. So later they dropped out again.
How did you find out about this information originally from at DuPont? Was it just in a casual conversation?
No, I think it probably came through the University of Illinois, the people down there.
I didn't
know what it happened to it. It was pretty general information. Oh, also Lilly had some rights from DuPont. I don't know what they were, but they never marketed the product.
You were quite active in ACS affairs and were president 1950. What was the state of the society like in 1950 when you were president?
I think the society was growing pretty nicely during that period. There were about 65,000 members altogether. Now, I guess, how many are there?
About over 130,000 now.
Yes, I know it's over 130,000. Physically, the society headquarters in Washington and Columbus did very well. I think that we built at the right time. When you see the agenda for the council meeting and see all the reports and groups that have been active in Pedri, it gives you pause because it's so extensive now, so such a big business. I've forgotten what the budget of the society is now, but the many millions per year.
There was something in CNE News about chemical abstracts. Mm-hmm.